up, everybody? Welcome back to Diving In Deep. Today, we've got my friend and country music's breakout star, Ernest. You might have seen his Ernest for Mayor signs if you're in Nashville, or you may have heard his newest album, Nashville, that showcases his growth and connection to his hometown. We're diving into his journey from writing songs and the impact that songwriters have had on his life to his family and the inspiration behind his music. You're going to love this episode with Ernest. Ernest, welcome. Thank you so, so much for coming on my podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I've been wanting to do a podcast for years, especially ever since I heard that you can make a lot of money on them. So I was like, let's
if you
do
end
podcast.
Up making a lot of money, let me know, because I would love for that to happen.
You already have a lot of money. You don't need any more money. You have more money than I do.
Oh no.
So what I like to do is let our guests, in their own words, like you tell the audience in like 1 minute or less, who is Ernest and what, how would you describe yourself?
All right. I'm Ernest Keith Smith. I'm from here, Nashville, Tennessee. I grew up like 15 minutes from Music Row. I have always, I guess my true north has always been at music in some capacity or entertainment. Before I knew that this was a career, it was baseball and bringing a guitar and making up songs about guys on my baseball team or people in the halls at school. I loved baseball. I thought I was going to play baseball forever. And then I got to college playing baseball and I hated school more than ever.
Yes.
Hated school more than I loved baseball. And I was spending more time on GarageBand in my dorm room making songs.
Right.
And so I just decided to fully commit in 2012. So we're 14 years into this is what I'm going to do. And the last couple of 3 years feels like we've got some good momentum. So,
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that's a very good description. Okay. I have a few questions. What position did you play?
I was a pitcher, but I'd play third base and left field when I wasn't pitching.
I played third base.
Did you?
Yeah. I'm
the
a
hot
really
corner, baby.
Great softball player.
Were you?
Yeah. Like I was even thinking maybe we should have brought our gloves and thrown, but then
I'm always down to play catch.
Always. Like
always.
On the road.
Yeah. I keep gloves and balls on my bus at all times.
Yes. I love to make my band play any sport. I mean, and I'm like you, if I wouldn't have done music, I probably would have gone into sports because I just, you know, but it's the same kind of brain. It's like, if you're a singer, your brain says to your vocal cords, do this. And it does. And just like athletics, you know, your brain says, do this and it does it.
It's very similar. And I was talking the other day, it's the team sport element of it all too, is like, we have big teams now in what we do. And one thing I loved about baseball is as a pitcher, it's my game. I'm in control and I have to trust all these people behind me. And it's very similar to, you know, the same dynamic we have now and the teams we're on.
Yes.
It's our game, but we can't do it without everybody else.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, or it's like, if you're the pitcher or you're the quarterback and everybody's, you know, either blaming you for the loss or they're
it's all on you either
you for
way.
The win. Yeah, yeah, it's all on you.
Yeah,
just like what we do in music. But well, not me. Like if something goes wrong, even if it's my fault, I blame someone else.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean,
you're a girl.
Yeah, exactly. I try to. Yeah. But actually, I'm not. I am a girl, but I'm not a feminist at all by any means.
Right.
I'm very, very old fashioned.
That's cool.
Yes. I like
even keel is a good way to be.
Very even keel.
Yeah.
And women are troublemakers, really. I mean, they
I'll let you say that.
Well, they are. I find that so many of my friends and like just watching girls, you know, they like to find something to worry about. And that goes all the way into your like 40s.
Yeah.
And girls just like to worry and be stressed, and guys aren't like that. Guys are just like, hey, everything's cool.
Let it roll.
Yeah, let it roll.
Yeah.
So how many siblings do you have?
I have one sibling. We're both adopted from different families. I have a younger brother named Chris, He's 7 years younger than me and 7 inches taller than me.
Wow. And are y'all close?
We're pretty close. We don't talk a ton, but we, you know, when we catch up, it's pick up where we left off.
Right.
Yeah. We're very, different. He's like in the finance world and I'm in this world, but you know, it's cool to catch up cause he's doing cool stuff. He's going to Dubai.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. He's traveling the world and stuff.
Where's the coolest place you've ever been?
That's a good question. I feel like the last year I got to see a lot of cool places.
Like, have you been to Australia?
Yeah, we went to Australia. We started the year last year in Australia. It was beautiful. New Zealand.
I think we talked about that.
Auckland, New Zealand was probably my favorite. We went to this vineyard, like, on an island off of Auckland. We took, like, a ferry ride, and it was insanely beautiful.
See, okay, so I don't want to say any, well, it's weird. I have three people from Australia in my group. My tour manager and both my lead guitar players are from Australia. I'm being invaded.
We're all being invaded. There's Dazzy. We got a couple riders at Big Loud, Australian. Yeah.
What is going on?
Gnar. Yeah.
Gnar. but I don't think I would go back to Australia because
the flight,
it's too fucking far.
It's a long way.
We flew to Dallas and then we did the longest flight in aviation history. It's an 18-hour direct from Dallas to Brisbane.
We did the Dallas flight. Well, we did Dallas to Auckland, but when we came back, we flew from Brisbane to Dallas.
It's so long. And it's like, to me, I just thought it looked like America.
It did kind of.
It was,
But you know it's not, which is cool too.
Yeah.
It's very coastal. It's coastal and it's a vibe. It's its own vibe.
And they don't speak English, so that's cool. Because none of the guys in my band speak English. No. I can't understand a word they say.
Well, it's English.
I know.
It is English.
It's Australian. Yeah, they speak Australian.
Australia-ish.
How or when, because we were just, I was just telling a story on the podcast Film Art before this, like, how I got into music and how it all started. And it all started as a little kid and having six siblings and we had the Evans Family Band. But like, I'm always so curious to know what makes a person know that they're supposed to do music and that they're great. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of people that do music and they're not great, or a lot of people that are amazing, but never make it or never even try. When did you know that you were a musician?
Yeah. I mean, my whole life, even when I was a kid, you know, pots and pans, drums and playing, you know, my parents are not musically inclined. But I had some extended family and cousins that always had instruments and guitar players. And, my grandmother had an organ at her house and every Sunday we'd have lunch at Nana's and I would go up to the organ and play like, you know, one key melodies of whatever church song, as the deer pants for the water. So I was playing by ear before I knew what any of that was.
Yeah.
Always just had an instrument around. I wanted a banjo for Christmas in the third grade and got one. It was just, that was one thing my parents were really good about. Like, even though they didn't play, they fully supported what I wanted at the time. If it was to go play summer baseball, they got me, you know, they'd break the bank and put me on a summer team or get me a banjo, a mandolin, guitar. They would always put me around the people that they thought, you know, could show me things, even though they couldn't. A very influential moment early on was there was a steel guitar player that played in the Opry band and on the Hee Haw band. His name was Russ Hicks, and his daughter, Lindsay, played basketball for my dad at David Lipscomb. And so that year, that third grade year, I had the banjo. I think they would always do like team dinners on Thursday nights. And one of these nights was at the Hicks house. And I was like picking around on one of his banjos, trying to play Cripple Creek or something like that. And my mom set it up with him to where he would take me to the Grand Ole Opry one night. And so I went with Russ Hicks to the Grand Ole Opry. We did the catering back there and everything. And I'm 10 years old. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm standing side stage watching the Opry. They're doing like a set change or something, intermission, right? And he takes me out and I stand in the circle and I look around the Opry House as a 10-year-old and just like, I want to do this one day.
Yeah.
The next time I stood in the circle was like 20 years later, almost to a T at my Opry debut.
Unbelievable.
And so that was the surreal moment of that night for my debut. Is like, wow, 10-year-old me, you know, I didn't make every decision in the world to get to the Opry debut between 10 and 30, but there was a part of me that knew that that's what I wanted to do even then.
Yeah.
I was way too much of a class clown and a wild cannon and who the fuck knows what Earn's going to do.
Yes.
But I always knew that whatever I was learning in school probably had nothing to do with what I was going to do in some capacity.
You're still the class clown.
For sure.
Yeah. I love that. That's why sure. I love hanging out with you.
Yeah. I can't help it.
And right. We've written together only once. We need to write together again.
For sure.
Because I think we were just kind of like screwing around.
Getting to know each other. Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
It was wonderful.
We should write some country songs.
We definitely will. I love what you're doing to help country music.
Thank you.
It's just truly amazing and something that I'm so grateful for, even though that sounds weird, but it just had gotten so far off.
Yeah.
You know, and I love, like, you turn on your records and it sounds like you're in the 70s or the 80s mm-hmm. and you're just listening to country music.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm only good at being, what is it? That's like my favorite of yours.
Which one?
I'm only something when I'm crazy.
I'm only comfortable when I'm crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, that is just perfect. It's just a perfect country song.
I think the DNA that is similar to, you know, the golden era and what I like to do is songwriting. You know, like, songs are important. I think the importance of telling truths in songs, whether they're personal or just truth that is the truth to the masses.
Yep.
Like, you know, the sad songs, the heartbreak songs, the pain feels good in country songs more so than it does in any other genre. And I think that,
oh my God, that's a great quote.
It does. And country music has always, look, the genre has to have those moments and those years where the genre, the pendulum swings to, like, you know, bro country changed the format for the better. When it first, you know, when Florida Georgia Line first came out, that opened up a whole can of worms mm-hmm. In a good way for the genre to move forward out of whatever the phase was. I think that the responsibility I'm taking with my projects is going backwards, is like my version of going forwards is going backwards. And
right.
Like, you know, when I say I make traditional country music, and the reason it's called traditional country music is because it's been done before.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, man. I mean, most of the people I would hope to impress with my music are dead. And so I feel like I owe it to country music to, like, bring it back to its purest form. And in the same stroke, it's fresh the way I do it. It's fresh. It's me. I haven't existed before, but I'm not afraid to cut old song. I'm cutting this old Dean Dillon song called "What If I Could." I got Lainey Wilson singing on it with me, and it just sat for 30 years. There's another Clint Daniels song that sat for 30 years, and, like, those songs need to live.
Absolutely.
Good country songs, good songs can last forever.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think there's a reason that we keep coming back to the 70s and 80s mm-hmm. and early 90s. It's a fine line to walk when you're trying to make traditional country music, because it can come across as satirical almost sometimes.
Yeah.
Too hokey.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Your music doesn't sound retro. It sounds country and traditional, but it's new. It sounds new, and it sounds
thank you.
Fresh.
Thank you.
But you sing country in the way that I sing country, where we do all the right country licks.
Yes.
You know, and the turns and
the stuff we listen to.
Yes.
We just regurgitate our version of.
Yes. Yeah. Like, when I watched George and Tammy, the show they did on Showtime. Mm-hmm. Did you watch that?
I didn't get into the show on Showtime. I haven't watched much TV lately.
So it was really, really good. But And the girl who played Tammy, I can't remember her name, but she's, I think it's Christina. What's her name? Anyway, they should have asked me to come and teach her how to sing Tammy Wynette, because
you do have a lot of Tammy in you.
A lot of Tammy. Yes. And just that country where you swoop into your words. And
yes.
She was very straight, like, stand by your man.
Yes.
And
you gotta sap it up.
You gotta sap it up. You gotta twang it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Why did you hate college so much?
Because I had to be there. I think it was like, it was just school on steroids. Where I went to school was in the middle of a small town surrounded by nothing.
Mm-hmm.
3.5 hours away from Nashville. And it was like, I don't know. I loved baseball. I loved being on a team. But going to class, like anytime I sat in class, I just couldn't wait for it to be over. I wasn't paying attention. I was probably sleeping in it.
Right.
It just felt like a big waste of time.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
And where I went to was like super judgmental about anything that if you weren't there to be a preacher, then you were there to be an athlete, and they all hated the athletes.
So it was kind of like a Christian school.
It was very, it wasn't even kind of like, it was a Christian school.
College. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I just like, well, I don't love organized religion.
Hmm.
And I hate college.
Yeah.
Like, I paid my children not to go to college. I'm like, I will support you for 4 years after you're 18.
Yeah.
If you just will not go to school.
Yeah.
Because I think.
I get it.
Huh?
I get that.
Yeah. I think, you know, plus Avery and Livy are both musicians. So then why do they need to go to college? And then Audrey just is crazy and doesn't care. And she's like, into TikTok.
Yeah.
Influencing.
There's so many different ways to be successful without a degree now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But, I just hated it, but I understand what you're saying about loving playing baseball, but then what after that?
Right. I wasn't going to go to the league. Like my other plan was probably end up coaching, take my dad's role at Lipscomb as a baseball coach.
Yeah.
That
would have been terrible.
Yeah. It would have ended up being tough, but.
Cause we wouldn't have had your music.
I know. And I wouldn't have, it took 10 years of rediscovering myself. You know, I rediscovered myself 3 or 4 times between deciding this is what I was going to do and where my music's been at for the last 3 or 4 years and where it's going. But that was just going to be 4 years put on pause before I started finding what I wanted to do.
Yes.
College is for some people. You got to, if a guy's performing surgery on me, God, I hope he went to college.
I hope he went to college. Doctors, lawyers, but like, so many young men need to go to like a trade school and you can make so much more money.
Yeah.
And you're not, paying all this money to just, why do we have to learn about so many things. Yeah.
So many
Even
things.
High school. Like, I feel like we should only go to school to 8th grade because we can learn to read and write and arithmetic.
I think trades are good. That's why I like the idea of Montessori school, which I never really knew anything about it until we started looking at it for Ryman, and we went and visited, and I was just like, they're teaching these kids like good skills for young kids are like coming up and introducing themselves and introducing their friends. And they're like 5 or 6 years old. Like those real world skills are so valuable.
And they focus on what each kid is.
Yep. Cater to each thing. I think small group learning is great. Cause for me, I was not just a class clown, but like I was dismissed because I'm so ADD and teacher knew I wasn't paying attention, but there's 23 kids in a class, so we got to move on.
Right.
Yeah.
So well,
it worked out.
I don't know. And I'm very old fashioned. I'm very conservative. And, I just don't like the group stuff. Like I went to college for 11 days.
Where'd you go?
I went to a college called Central Methodist College in Fayette, Missouri, and they had a really great music program, and I got a full ride scholarship, and my family was so proud, but
11 days is all you lasted?
11 days, because I grew up poor on a farm. I also grew up on stage, so I'd been singing in bars since I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And get there, and I decided to do music, but they want you to change everything. Like they wanted me to change my twang and,
yeah,
you know, just all that bullshit. And I thought music theory was so freaking hard.
Yes.
I was just like, this.
If you got it naturally, it's hard. It's hard to teach someone who doesn't have it. And it's hard to teach someone who does have it.
Absolutely.
You either got it or you don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I didn't play an instrument, you know, well, right. I do play drums, but I didn't play guitar or piano. So I hated music theory. Yeah. So my brother and I just each saved $1,000 and moved to Nashville and got jobs waiting tables. And I became the new demo singer.
Yeah.
Town, and that's how it all happened.
That worked. Whose demos were you singing?
Oh gosh. Like,
did you sing any hit demos?
Yes. I sang, Jesus Take the Wheel.
Really?
Yes. Either that or I passed on it. There's some story about
Jesus. Two very different things. You either sang the demo or passed on Jesus.
I was already famous when that came out. So when you say bro country, because I have a deep seated hatred for bro country just because they stopped playing girls.
Mm.
When bro country started, and I blame Luke Bryan, even though I love him and we're good friends, but when he came out,
it's your fault, Luke.
It is Luke's fault. Luke, I mean, and I know he's tuning in to every single episode of my podcast.
Yeah.
But the country girl shake it for me. And everybody wanted to do that.
Yep.
And they were, and then country radio started succeeding with that. So they just kept doing it. Cause you know how,
yep,
it's like, why do they remake movies? Nobody has an original thought.
Right.
You know, which is why I have so much respect for you and your writing, because it's just, it is like, no one's ever going to write a song that is 100% original, but the spin that you put on your songs. And then of course, you know, flower shops, like that is just, that reminds me of, Wanted.
Yeah.
Alan Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where he's talking to the guy and yeah.
Yeah. Chasing as a songwriter, you know, trying to hit a moving target, it's really hard. And, you know, as a songwriter starting out in town, you really don't have much of a choice rather than to try to write what's on the radio.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But once I committed to being my own artist, then, well, I'm going to cut this song. And if people like it, cool. But like, I like it. And so now my thought process for writing songs for me is like, does it pass the me test for me?
Yes.
If radio gets on board, if radio likes a song that I like, amazing. But trying to, you know, by the time a song gets cut and put out on the radio, it could be 6 or 8 months.
Yes.
So what, you know, what's getting written in 6 or 8 months, it's going to be that's a long time.
It is.
Things can change very fast, especially now.
Yeah.
Every 2 months, there's somebody else that blew up with something else.
And now, I feel like writers are a lot more respected than they used to be. Because one of the reasons I think that everybody goes crazy over you is because you're such a great writer and you've written hits for other people, where it used to not be quite as, you know.
I get it. I think that, yeah, the songwriting culture is alive and well right now.
Yeah.
In a way that it was the music we're talking about, like the camaraderie between writers, like Music Row, the energy on Music Row. We're all hanging out. We get up at 9:30 in the morning, have coffee, break off into rooms. Like, it doesn't feel as stagnant as it did in like 2010 through 2015, mm-hmm, of like, we're going to write from 11 to 3 and get one song done.
It's, that's
like,
right.
We're going to feel it out. If a song comes out, then it comes out between 9 and 10:30. Why not write another one? You know, we're having fun writing songs. And if country is moving in the direction I'd like it to, then, you know, all these guys that are writing songs, that they probably want to be writing country songs, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun to write four chords and the truth. And, you know, the way Willie Nelson wrote songs was likely just in a notepad as a poem. Mm-hmm. You can tell when you read a Willie Nelson lyric.
Yeah, because he has to speak a lot of it to get it all.
It reads
in.
Down like poetry.
It's really,
you can, and then you go put a guitar to it. But like, in the same breath, a lot of the stuff I wrote with and for Morgan is totally not that. It's totally a fusion of the other shit that I was influenced by, that rap, R&B, pop.
Yes.
Like that shit is in my DNA as much as, you know, the good country stuff is.
Yeah.
So it's been nice to have that outlet. You know, a lot of my success I owe to Morgan cutting my songs and our relationship, obviously. But while building that, having to again redefine myself and my artistry was a challenge at first, and now it's fun because, all right, this is a Morgan Wallen brand. Here's Ernest, and they're not, yes, they don't overlap.
Right? I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, they don't overlap. It was nothing for me to give away a song. I knew I was writing a song for Morgan or with Morgan. I know we're writing for Morgan, and now I can go in and I know I'm writing a song for me. If I'm not with Morgan, I'm writing a song for me.
Now, Morgan's not listening, but who's the better writer between the two of you? Is it you?
I'm the better freestyler.
Yeah.
I can freestyle songs.
Okay. But yeah, you are a really good freestyler.
I freestyle a lot. Morgan's actually a great writer and has great ideas, and he's very involved when we're writing. Uh-huh. Like, you know, some people sit there and yay or nay things the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You're the artist. You can do whatever you want.
I'm very involved. Like, I cannot stand when I go into a room to write with someone I've never written with or never even met, and they think that I'm going to do that. Just sit in the room.
Yeah.
But like, I wrote all of my biggest hits.
Yeah.
And I'm a lyricist because, yes, I get so bored with my melodies.
Yeah.
I think I told you that when we wrote, yeah, I was like, you know, and I think I was having a crappy like vocal day or something, but I like to write,
yeah,
the words, yeah, and then let other people do the music. Cause I feel like I do the same melody over and over.
It's easy to get caught. And that's why I got to take breaks eventually. Cause I start sounding, it all sounds the same.
Right.
Yeah.
So are you also a John Mayer freak?
Oh yeah.
I'm a freak.
I love John Mayer.
But I don't want to meet him.
I kind of do.
I don't.
I kind of do.
I mean, we can meet him together, I guess.
Yeah, I'd love to meet him.
I feel like I'm afraid he's going to be mean.
Oh, he wouldn't be mean.
Okay.
No, I would love to meet him. I definitely would love to not even pick his brain. I've seen a clip of him on Zane Lowe where he's like kind of explaining how he writes, and he just picks up a guitar and starts, he's like, you got to just start singing stuff. And that's what I do. Unless I have intentionally, a title came to mind or overheard something, we got to write that. I usually just pick up a guitar and start singing.
Right.
And
then let the words come.
For sure. And yeah. I think a lot of the John Mayer stuff is in my DNA. That's what I was listening to in middle school, high school.
Yeah.
Slow Dancing in a Burning Room, obviously. Your Body is a Wonderland. Mm-hmm. All those songs were like, I was learning those songs to go play on the playground or in the hallways.
And why did he get made fun of for that song?
I don't know.
That's an amazing song.
It's an amazing song.
I mean, every lyric is incredible. No, he is my all-time, like...
Yeah, he's the one.
You know, dream duet. But I'm just afraid that, you know...
Don't meet your heroes type.
Yeah,
thing.
Don't meet your heroes. Yeah. It's weird. And I talk about him a lot, and he's never...
interacted.
He ignores me. Yeah. Screw
right.
John Mayer. I'm no longer a fan. But that's how I got...
Unless you want to come on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Or sing with me. Or just meet
me. Yeah.
Otherwise, screw you. Avery, when he started out as a drummer too, and then one day... When
Avery's big into John Mayer, surely, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because when he was like 13, I said, you should listen to John Mayer and really, really get into him. And then, boy, he did. And then he went in... to everybody that John Mayer loves.
Yes.
You know, and that's how he became such a great guitarist, because he just never, ever, ever did anything but practice and play football.
Yeah.
That was it. And he played baseball too. He was a catcher.
Yeah.
But John, and then he was also obsessed with Eminem.
Same.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was able
to... lyric and flow, like, you know, Eminem... gets whatever rap Eminem gets, but as far as lyricist and the way he, you know, his phrasing, everything, so influential to me. And like, you know, freestyle rapping was what I was doing before anything else.
Yes.
And I was in third and fourth grade knowing words I shouldn't know because I was listening.
Right.
I was sneaking Eminem in my little Walkman.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Dude, you're so much like Avery that he would do the same thing.
Eminem, John Mayer, George Strait,
Yeah.
It's like the Holy Trinity and everything that falls in between that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does Sarah Evans fit in that?
Right smack dab in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because when you said, you know, bro country was the beginning of, you know, moving on to another and letting go of that, but it just made me angry because I was like, I think I was pushing a little bit stronger, like around that time or a little bit after. And I started noticing like, this is really a lot harder to get my music played.
Yeah.
And I figured out that, you know, they just wanted to stick with the,
that had to do with it for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. The, you know, just like anything, you know, before long, traditional country music will be overdone for a while.
Right.
And it all comes and goes in cycles. But Jamie Johnson, I heard him talking about this in an interview. It's important what we do. Country music is important. And like holding ourselves and the craft to a standard is important because, you know, Cash, Waylon, Willie, Haggard, anything Hank Cochran,
Lefty
Frizzell, Don Williams,
love him,
Marty Stewart, all these, the generation below me, even my generation, could easily forget that all this happened unless we feed it to them.
That's right.
Whether it be in form of covers or I'm posting about it or writing songs in the spirit of, you know, it's like not copycat. It's that was their standard and I want that same standard.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like Only Comfortable When I'm Crazy is, you know, it's on my mind because I was just listening to it right before I came out. And it's one of those where it's like, and you also know how to sing country music. Like, I wonder why people know how to do that and some people don't.
I don't know. Maybe the insane amount I listen to.
Like, yeah.
One of my problems as an artist is I'm almost too much of a chameleon. Like, imitation is easy for me. Voice acting or whatever.
Yeah.
So I can put myself, I can do a John Mayer type of singing or I can lean country, but it's more natural for me to lean country. And it took me a while. Like, I rebelled against singing country because I'm not very redneck. And at that time, the bro country stuff like Tailgates and Mud and all that isn't me.
Right.
But like the golden age country songs, I can sing that. Like, that, you don't have to be redneck to sing a country song.
No.
Redneck and country are not the same thing.
They are not the same thing.
Yeah. Once that clicked for me, then I was like, oh, I'm a country artist. I'm a country singer.
Is sophisticated.
Yeah.
I feel like redneck is not.
Correct.
Yeah.
And there's a time and place for both. Like,
yes.
Be redneck.
Mm-hmm.
I'll write those songs for other artists for sure.
Yes.
And doing redneck shit with my redneck friends is fun.
Totally. Like, yeah.
You know, I might not be the one implementing blowing up some dynamite, you know, but
yes.
I'm going to be like, hell yeah, if they do.
Yeah. You're going to be all about it. But yeah. And then I'm somewhere in between. Like, I started out singing bluegrass and there's like a,
was the Evans Family Band? Was that what that was?
Yeah, the Evans Family Band.
Was that bluegrass? Was that a bluegrass band? Okay.
Yes. And so that's how I learned to sing. Like, my wheelhouse is the very, very Patti Loveless, very country.
Up in here.
Up in here and hit those notes and just have them soar. But I'm like you. I'm also a chameleon because I grew up on stage having to do the 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. gigs.
Yeah, you're singing a lot of different songs.
Yeah, so I learned how to do Reba and the Judds and just copy them.
Yeah, it's good though. Like, I use an example, you know, I'm in kid world. I have almost a three-year-old, so there's Play-Doh everywhere. But, you know, so like if you had, he's got this Play-Doh set and there's like probably 15 colors. He gets them out on the kitchen counter. They're all out. And then at the end of the day, all the colors are mixed up and shoved into one thing. It's like, that is like the perfect example of my musical influences. There's all these different colors on the table and they all have gotten packed into one container.
Right.
And it's hard to decipher what it started out as because it's all there. It's all in me. It could all, any version of it could come out at any time.
Yes.
But as an artist, it's my job to focus in on what color I pull for what song I'm going to sing.
That's right.
With my name on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. You have great analogies.
Well, that's what I do.
I can never think it's true. True. I hope. That is what songwriting is.
Yeah.
And so your little boy, his name is Ryman.
Ryman.
That is so freaking cute.
Ryman Saint Smith.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. With a boring name like Smith, you had to spice it up on the front end a
little
bit.
That's true. And Ryman is just perfect.
He's perfect.
Because not many people are from Nashville.
Not many people. And it's cool. I mean, he knows. I got the windows from the Ryman Auditorium tattooed on me.
Oh,
and
wow.
He always points at you. He goes, those are windows from my auditorium.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He is so freaking cute.
Yeah, he's adorable.
He's really is. Adorable. You need to make more babies. You make cute babies.
I'm hardly there for him. I don't want to burden Delaney with another kid right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Take him on the road.
He does. Now he's at the age where he will come on the road more.
Good.
For sure. But like, you know, we got 5 acres and he's got goats and chickens and puppies and kittens. Like,
yeah. So he's,
it's tough to pull him from that where he can play in a creek to like being in a parking lot of Coyote Joe's.
That's true.
So
that is true.
When he's like, when he's a little, he's always welcome, but I think he'll be able to enjoy it more when he's like maybe another year or so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cause I took mine on the road cause I did shit for brains ex-husband. And so he wouldn't watch him at home. So I always had to take
road him. Was the move. There's perks getting raised on the road. I mean, you get introduced to a lot of real life. You're around adults. Your social skills are going to get better. Like, Ryman likes being on the bus. He loves getting in his little bunk.
Mm-hmm.
There's Bluey stickers all over my front lounge.
I love
Chandler
that.
Bought a gut string guitar on the road and later that day had a excavator sticker on it and he hadn't taken it off yet. So,
that's so cute.
Yeah, everything's getting smacked with stickers around when Ryman's there.
Yeah, my kids loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't know anything else, but I just was not, you know, my whole thing was like, I'm not leaving them for more than 3 days, but I'm the mom too. It's different with the dad.
Right.
Like,
that's Delaney's the same way. 3 days is kind of the limit. If it's going to be more than that, then we'll figure out a way to get back to
him. Exactly.
But he loves it. He loves being on stage. Like him coming out to sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star was his idea. Like we sing Twinkle Twinkle every night when he goes to bed. I'll fall asleep in a chair. Not even doing lyrics, just humming Twinkle Twinkle. So that's our song. So when I was like, do you want to sing Twinkle with Daddy? And he was like, yeah, on stage. I'm like, yeah. And he ran out there and then he kept trying to run out there after.
Yes.
It was like, hey, time's up, kid. You know, he does love it. And
I had to spank the girls to get them off the stage.
To get them
one
off
time.
Stage?
Yeah. They wouldn't leave and I had to like pop their butts and the crowd just went insane.
Yeah. He has no fear with he did it at Fenway Park and then we did it again months later at the Braves Stadium. Was it Truist, I guess, now?
Yeah.
I mean, he just ran out there to 40,000 people. Like,
he's so cute.
How's it going?
He is so cute.
Yeah, he's a
really
ham.
He really is. Oh, my gosh.
He's a ham.
So, your new album is coming out. It's called Nashville, Tennessee. Why is it called that?
Nashville, Tennessee. I feel like the DNA of Music City and Music Row is songs, songwriters. And this album, there's no storyline. It's not a concept album, but the one thing that remains true throughout the top to bottom 26 songs is, songwriting,
mm-hmm.
well-written songs, co-writers, like Nashville, Tennessee would not be Nashville, Tennessee without the songwriters.
That's right.
So that's why this is my first album. I've cut outside songs. I cut three. Like I said, there's, What If I Could, old Dean Dillon song. If You Don't Know By Now, old Clint Daniels song. You Don't Have to Die, an old Chris Stapleton song. And none of those songs ever got cut, but they're just as good now as they were the day they wrote them. And I've got Rivers Rutherford as a writer on my album. I've got his son, Reese Rutherford, on the album. I've got Dean Dillon. I've got Jesse Joe. So it's like generational songwriters on this album. And, you know, guys I signed to my publishing company, Cadillac, mm-hmm. on the record. If I'm an artist, it's my responsibility to make sure that good songs win. Like I'm not too proud to cut an outside song. I don't have anything to prove as a songwriter. I love writing songs. I would happily write a whole album with just songs I wrote, and I've done it before.
Yeah. But when now, you have something, I mean,
now I'm proud to cut. I can't believe I get to sing a song Dean Dillon wrote 30 years ago.
That's right.
So like, I see that as like, I get to be a steward of this song more so than like, oh, I'm scrambling, I need songs.
Yes.
Like, it's like, hell yeah, I'll sing this song.
Absolutely.
And if one of these kids in town, if this album does, you know, open up a gateway for traditional sounding country songs, then now there's a wide open lane for the kids to write these songs.
Yes.
And not just the kids, the Dean Dillons, the Rivers, the generation that went 10 years, 15 years where music had gotten so far away from what their wheelhouse is.
Mm-hmm.
There's like another career around the corner for them now.
Yes.
And hell yeah. Like I said, it's a responsibility and I'd take it. I don't take it lightly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Nashville, Tennessee, the DNA of that is songs. And that is the whole purpose of this album, is the power of a song and the life of a song.
And it's got like 26 songs on it.
26 songs.
That's amazing.
Twinkle, Twinkle, live at Fenway Park included.
And, what's his name? Moy still producing?
Joey Moy. Yeah.
Joey Moy, yeah.
He's great. He's always been great. Obviously from the
Did
day.
He tell you to go in and like scream your songs?
No.
Like, look at this photograph.
No, but he does get good vocals. Like one consistent, look at this photograph.
Yeah.
No, but you know what? The consistent thing about Joey is that he gets the best vocal out of people. And he's always found powerful singers. Like Morgan sings his ass off. He's a loud singer. And within the genre, you got to think how many acts he's developed within one genre and made them all unique. Like me and Hardy will be cutting records at the same time, and you've got a song like Flower Shop's getting cut at the same time Sold Out's getting cut, and Joey's behind both of them, and you would never know.
Right.
But that's how genius he is, and how much he cares about not just the genre, but being unique, I guess, or originality. You know, like they don't all sound the same.
Yeah.
We're on the same label making songs with the same producer, and not two artists sound the same.
That's very cool.
And that's on Joey.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, my single comes out tonight. My first single from my new album.
Let's go.
I'm so excited.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Nothing
you
feels
being on the podcast
than
today is good luck.
It is good luck.
For the album. It's called Pride. And anyway, Jeff Trott produced it, and he's Sheryl Crow's producer. He wrote If It Makes You Happy by himself.
Yes.
And when I...
Was Sheryl Crow's studio like right here? Wasn't there a red... Didn't there used to be a red building that she recorded out of right here next to the well, or where the well was?
No. It's a little bit down like Granny White.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. But I chose him, but same thing. Like my album does not sound like Sheryl Crow record.
Right.
At all. I mean, he's able to do that, and I co-produce everything because I'm really
you're hands-on and care.
I'm very hands-on and kind of I mean a diva, I guess you would just say.
You micromanage.
I micromanage.
Nah.
I micromanage music.
Yeah.
But not at home. Like at home,
yeah,
I'm a servant.
But micromanage for your sound.
Yes.
That you kind of got to.
You have to. I mean, yeah. I can't let a guitar solo be put on or anything like that without me being there.
Yeah.
And a good example is, I'm so bad with names. I'm so fucking bad with names, but who's the guitar player? He played the solo on Real Fine Place to Start. He's married to Sarah Buxton, or he was.
Oh, Book.
Duh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He played on my record too. Some songs. Yeah.
So same thing. I was in there and he was going to do the solo on Real Fine Place to Start.
Uh-huh.
And instead we just like wrote it together and sang it.
Oh,
I was
that's
like,
cool.
What if you're like, do, 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 do.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, that's cool. I like it. And
I love him.
I think musicians probably like that too, because
oh yeah,
they feel like they play the same stuff all the time.
For sure. Any outside input is great. And I'm that way too. Like if I hear a part, I'll sing it. Steel guitar, Paul Franklin.
Oh, I know.
He's so good about that. You can sing a part to him and he'll play it and then make it better. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Here's the world. Here's the melodic world to live in. Now go be.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm open, very open to ideas. And I'm sure you are too. Like I micromanage, but I'm not stubborn.
If the right idea presents itself first, you're not going to change it just so it's your idea.
Just because it's my, yeah exactly.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. So Nashville, Tennessee comes out when?
April 12th.
I'm going to be praying.
I'm really excited.
I'm sure it's going to be amazing. Yeah. I mean, I'm just fascinated by what you've done and what you've accomplished, and not because of your talent, because you're so great. And I really mean that. I really love your voice.
I'm
very hard on singers.
Yeah.
You know, but well, I love
good.
A great,
I passed the Sarah Evans test.
Yeah. I just love a great singer. I don't care who they are. If they're a great singer and the song is great, like Nickelback. I was obsessed with Nickelback.
Yeah, dude. Nickelback's fucking awesome.
Why do people make fun of them?
Because they're so big. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
That's it. The only thing to hate about them is that they were fucking massive.
Yes.
But it had nothing to do with them not being awesome.
Well, I
saw Nickelback play here last year and was just like, holy shit. They're still putting on a badass show.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love big voices like that. Like he kind of reminds me of Bob Seger.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, powerful and I voice. Love fast vibrato.
Yes.
Cause I have very fast vibrato.
Yes. Hank Jr. That's why I love Hank Jr.'s voice so much. She's got that such good vibrato.
Queen of my heart.
Mm.
I mean, that is probably my favorite Hank Williams song.
Both Hanks, the Williams lineage vocal all the way through down to Sam was great. Sam has such natural vibrato too.
Sam is incredible.
Yeah. His version of Weatherman's so good.
He's incredible. So tell me about the music industry right now. Like it's so different from when I came in the late '90s because I signed with RCA and they made me famous.
Right.
Now it's like they want you to be famous first.
Definitely. Well, you know, I think that there's pros and cons to the way both things happen. The old school way of where the record label makes you and ships you off is a way. But now it's like they're protecting their investment by, you know, they want things to be a sure thing, take less risk, you know, which I guess from the business side I get, but for the sake of art, like there's so much shit that, you know, falls by the wayside because their socials aren't popping, you know, or like, oh, this song is phenomenal, but it only has 30,000 views on TikTok. So let's find another one. It's like, dog, listen to it. Like A&Ring with your
and
eyes.
Push it.
Yeah. I feel like, is this dog hair? This seat? It's rug hair. Every time
it's
I move,
rug
okay,
hair.
I was like, yeah. Where's the dog?
But it's okay, I have BO, so we're both good.
My feet stink, so it's all good. You know what? I think that just like genres are, you know, the pendulum. I think it's getting to a place where art's important,
good,
or at least going to lead again. You know, if TikTok gets shut down or whatever, that a lot of people are going to be scrambling. And I do feel for them because TikTok is a play. Like I found Chandler on TikTok, my steel guitar player. He was 18 or 19 years old. He had just bought a steel guitar from Carter Vintage and started playing licks and posting it. And he happened to pop up on my For You page. Thank God.
Yes.
But, you know, just because some kid is making 50 videos to the same shitty song, now it has a million views and, you know, it's.
And how do you even know if they can perform?
You don't. And that's what Co Wetzel said last week. He's like, what happened to the road dogs? Like we used to go have to dig it out in clubs.
That's right. And pay your dues. Bars.
Yeah. You got to pay the dues. And Craig Wiseman, I'm quoting a bunch of people. Craig, when he did my podcast, made a great point. Everybody has to pay their dues. You're either going to pay them on the front end or the back end. And God help it being on the front end. You know, pay your dues, grind it out. bust your ass, suck, be bad, put out shitty records, get told no, keep playing songs, something pops, and then it's fucking, you've already been through it.
That's right.
Now it's smooth sailing versus you're going to get the world handed to you and you don't even know how to run yet.
That's right. That's why I made Avery and Olivia come out on the road with me. I mean, and they were so afraid of the like nepotism stuff. And I'm like, no, this isn't nepotism. This is, you've never had a chance to, like, I grew up on stage. You grew up on the bus with me watching me. So I think they're thankful now that I
for sure
made them do that. But they were very, they're just going to think we're, you know, up here. And I'm like, no, you're
no, given a, right? Give an opportunity to your kids. But as for the industry as a whole goes, I'd say it's ever changing faster than it ever has been. I don't think there's a right way right now. I don't think there's a wrong way. I think that things that mattered a lot just 2 years ago don't matter as much as they do now.
Like, and what?
I think the social media thing really is probably coming back to where it's like the people are going to start A&R-ing with their ears again.
Okay.
Analytics matter, obviously, in a business. Analytics matter. There's so many different ways to get numbers and pick songs based on what people are streaming. That's only gonna keep growing. But yeah. I think it's possible if I have anything to do with it, even just as a publisher, if there's a talented kid writing good songs, I'm gonna invest my time and money into that.
Yes.
Because that kid will be able to write themselves out of a wet paper sack.
Right.
And you're going to get into a wet paper sack in this career.
Yes.
One way or the other way. You're a writer, an artist.
And all the greats got signed without social media.
Yeah. Talent and hard work are going to always rise to the top.
Yes.
And I'm happy for anybody that has success because it's a dog eat dog world. No matter how you got it, if you're able to make money doing this, more power to you. But I hope the trend leads itself to people caring more about longevity than flash in the pan success.
Yes. Yeah.
Longevity, you know, there's a reason, like I said, there's a reason that most of the shit I listen to is dead people now.
Exactly. You
know, the shit lasted longer than them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I brought you a gift because you told me that you wanted a gift.
Okay.
So
is it that car? Is it the car that's outside?
No.
Oh, damn it.
I can't afford to give you a car.
I bet you could.
Maybe after Pride comes out tonight.
After Pride.
I brought you a Suds in the Bucket sweatshirt.
Let's go.
Because you texted me and said you want one.
I need that. When I saw this, I immediately needed it.
Oh my God, that is going to look so good on you.
Green is my color. Let's go.
Green is your color.
There.
Oh, I got to put my mic back.
Yeah.
Green is your color for sure. Is
I love
here?
It.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And then I was going to do something funny and then I'm going to let you go. Okay. Because we already been talking an hour?
Oh yeah.
I'm so sorry. I tend to talk people's ears off.
It's all good. We're great.
Okay. I wanted to do a George and Tammy song together, and it's spur of the moment. Okay.
Right.
I'm just going to name a song.
Okay.
Avery already knows the song.
Avery, where you at?
Where are you at? Where are you at?
I'm learning the song.
I'm learning the song too.
So the song is a surprise to Ernest, but I told Avery to learn it so that we could have at least, you know,
yeah.
Like if you just absolutely don't know it, but I'm sure you will because
what's
it's
up,
George
bro?
And Tammy.
How are you?
Good, man. Good to see you too.
Hey, y'all. I know this is an abrupt ending, but that's because Ernest and I and my son Avery recorded an exclusive cover of Golden Rings and He Stopped Loving Her Today by George Jones. Golden Rings is by George Jones and Tammy Wynette. And He Stopped Loving Her Today is just by George Jones. Any country fan will know that. So head on over to my YouTube channel to check it out.